Without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it.
That doesn't mean that the president can do anything and can get away with it forever, but it does mean that for official acts in office, he can't be prosecuted for those official acts.
What we're gonna do is end up with people in the commander-in-chief seat that are fearful of being the commander-in-chief because they know every decision they could potentially make is gonna be scrutinized and potentially end up in the courts.
TikTok poses a really unique threat because of who owns the algorithm. 41% of American youth spend 2 hours a day or more on TikTok, served self-harm and eating disorder content within 2 minutes and 8 minutes respectively.
Facebook, Meta, and Google are every bit as evil as TikTok, if not more so. They're run by people who hate the United States of America, and they've been way worse in terms of political censorship than TikTok.
All right, folks, Donald Trump's in court in Manhattan. The Supreme Court is taking up the immunity case in Washington, D.C., and Arizona is going after a bunch of Trump associates, saying that they are indicted on issues of trying to overturn the last election. That's all happening on the court front. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, was in New York. He got booed for trying to shout down a bunch of college kids that are protesting a bunch of BS. We're going to talk about whether that's a good idea or not. And then all the liberals are headed to Washington for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Should conservatives attend or not? Guess where I come down on this? We'll get the panel's take on this as well. We're joined today by Seth Denson, columnist and economic and political commentator extraordinaire. My former colleague, Steve Cortez, he's the founder of the League of American Workers and was a senior strategist for the Trump 16 and 20 campaigns. And then Ale Mare, who is the executive director of American Parents Coalition, really made a big effort on this TikTok legislation that just passed the House. A lot to get into with all of them. But before we do that, I want to tell you about two of the amazing sponsors that keep this show free across all platforms. Once again, take the time to subscribe. Let's hear from them and then get into it with the panel. If you are looking for the perfect Mother's or Father's Day gift, and both are coming up, by the way, I've got the perfect gift for you that's going to be unique and meaningful. Trust me when I say you will be the envy of your brothers and sisters, your cousins, your aunts, your uncles. And trust me, you will see your parents hang it in their house. Check out what my friends at Paint Your Life have done. All you need to do is text Spicer to 87204 and you'll get in on what I'm about to tell you. Now, look, I took a picture of me. You can take a picture of me to give to your parents, but I think they'd probably want something of you. And you can even make it a compilation, right? So you could take a bunch of pictures and make it a family picture, maybe a pet added in. And the folks at Paint Your Life can work with you to make that the painting that you've always wanted. Acrylic, charcoal, oil, whatever it is, you get to choose that. You get to choose the frame and you get to choose the artist. And you work with that artist. They'll send you video updates on the work that they're doing. You get to fully approve it. It's 100% guarantee. And if you text Spicer right now to 87204, the folks at Paint Your Life are going to give you 20% off and free shipping. This is like you don't even have to think anymore. This is it. I found my Mother's and Father's Day gift right now. This is the answer. Go right now. It's fully refundable. You get to choose the artist that you want, and you have a gift that, trust me, is going to make your brothers and sisters and everyone else envious of what you got them. Remember that message and data rates do apply. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Think about where you were 10 years ago. Do you think that you're the same person you are? I know sometimes, if I'm being honest, maybe not me, right? I've got a little less energy. I've got a little less muscle tone. I'm working hard. Trust me. One of the things that I've found, though, that helps me is a supplement from my friends at Nugenix, and it's got Tesnor in it right now. This is giving us back that testosterone that we've lost over the years. And I think that if you know what I'm talking about, that lack of energy, the folks at Nugenix are making sure that we've got it. And if you text 231-231 and use Spicer, you will get a free sample. That's easy. No harm, no foul. You get to try it for free and see if it works for you. 231-231, text the word Spicer. And here's the thing. You're going to get a free bottle of Thermo X. It's an unbelievable fat incinerator. So you're helping your testosterone, you're kick-starting your energy levels, and you're also getting this amazing fat incinerator. I mean, what could be a better deal? And it's, if you text 231-231 Spicer, you have nothing to lose. Try it now. You'll get that complimentary bottle And remember that texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messaging. Consent is not required to purchase. Message and data rates, as always, may apply. This is the number one doctor-recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent study conducted by IQVIA 2022. All right, gang's all here. So much to get to today. I couldn't be more excited to have a panel discussion on this Thursday. You know, as I was getting ready for it, obviously, yesterday, kind of talking about topics, we had a lot to go down and so much to get to that's going on in Washington. But I do want to start with the big news today in terms of the court. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know that any of us are. So this is even more fun. But Steve, I'll start with you. A lot of the court watchers say that the thing to look for today was how much the justices asked questions, because that was going to this big issue about is there immunity or not was the big threshold question and where that line was. And in particular, the court watchers were saying, watch the conservative justices. Do they really start to probe? And sure enough, Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Thomas, who generally doesn't say a ton, right, was really going after Trump's attorney. Now, again, I don't, I took one con law course and I watch a lot, Law and Order. So there's my legal prowess. But just, do you make anything out of what's being asked so far?
Well, with the major disclosure that, and caveat that I also am not an attorney, thank goodness that I'm also not an attorney. But I will say this, you know, these supposed court watcher experts are routinely wrong. And I think it's because most of them have such an ideological lens and filter that they can't be sort of honest legal analysts. But, you know, I thought that President Trump's lawyer's opening statement was incredibly powerful when he said, if there is no presidential immunity, there's no president of the United States. Now, that doesn't mean that the president can do anything and can get away with it forever, but it does mean that for official acts in office, he can't be prosecuted for those official acts. And even if he commits crimes in unofficial acts, you have to wait until he's out of office. And by the way, he could be impeached and removed if he were to do something particularly heinous in his, you know, in his private conduct. So I think the president has a compelling case. President Trump does. We'll see what the justices come up with.
You know, Seth, to that point, I mean, isn't the real central question not whether he has immunity or not? Because I don't think if you don't give the president some immunity, and this was sort of brought up, then you can go after a president for bombing another country that death results in. But isn't the question fundamentally whether or not this action that he was taking was an official one or not?
Yeah, I tried to keep going through. And of course, they're taking that speech he gave from behind the pulpit, right? I mean, the mainstream media keeps playing that over and over and over again. If we're not going to concede, we're going to continue to fight. I mean, fight what, though? I mean, I think we're kind of creating a context that may not have existed because we want that to be the narrative and we can take those bite-sized pieces. So, yeah, I think to that point, Sean, I think that this sets a terrible precedent where we go, regardless of the party of the president, and that we can take certain sound bites and create them into a narrative that makes it sound like it's, you know, it's anti-American and anti-patriotic and transfer of power and all of that. Certainly at that time, there were still questions about what was going on. Everybody was asking questions, at least anybody with a mind. But, you know, and so, again, I think when we take those bite-sized clips and try to create a legal narrative around it, which obviously we see happen all the time, I think it's a scary precedent for where we might go as a country.
Ali, when you look at this, and I assume you're not a lawyer too, because I don't think any of us are, but is there something that you're, as an American and as a viewer and as a watcher saying, here's what I hope the court decides or doesn't? I mean, do you want some clarity on what the president can and can't do?
For sure. And I think for me, similarly to what Seth said, it's the precedent. I think it's extremely dangerous, you know, to be going back after the fact, playing Monday morning quarterback, taking all these clips out of context and trying to piece together this narrative where you're setting a precedent to do that after every administration. We're already seeing kind of a slippery slope precedent with impeachment movements. And I don't think that that's necessarily productive. Overall, I think we need to be really careful the way that the precedent is being set and give, to your point, some clarity on where those boundaries are.
You know, and Sean, just so that, you know, it doesn't look like I or any of us are just reflexively trying to defend Trump. You know, you mentioned drone strikes. And to be specific there, look, President Obama killed an American citizen in a drone strike purposefully with no due process, right, in the Middle East. Now, was that the right thing to do? Was it just? Was it even legal? I think the answer to all of those is no. But should he be prosecuted for it? Absolutely not, right?
Correct.
Because it was bad judgment as commander-in-chief, in my view. But was it illegal in terms of he should be prosecuted either at the time or post-presidency? Absolutely not, even though I believe he clearly committed an illegal act. So just to be fair here, I would apply that same principle to President Obama as I would to President Trump.
Yeah, and I think what you're touching on is so important. And this is where there's days in which I think the way you frame this, Steve, was important. So many times I find myself in arguments with people that are like, you're just reflexively defending Trump. And I'm like, no, I'm actually trying to defend the rule of law. Like, this isn't a pro or and. In fact, I think the opposite is true. Most people are willing to convict Trump as opposed to think of the long-term consequences of not defending this action. And I look at, to take your thing one step further, when President Obama pulled out of Afghanistan, 13 service members lost their lives. Do I think that how they pulled out was horrible and caused the death of people? Yes. Do I think he should be prosecuted? No. And I don't think that people on the left fully appreciate the fact that if you agree with what could potentially come out of this court, you're not in the short term, sure, that's getting Trump. In the long term, that's undermining the presidency. And I think, Seth, that's what I think is getting lost in this discussion.
Yeah, you want a commander in chief, regardless of party, to feel like they're able to make decisions sometimes on the fly that they feel like are in the best interest. And again, I'm not, that's where I'm talking about the precedents, not necessarily this particular situation. It's what Steve and everybody was talking about, right? And I think what happens here is when you do start to set this new stage, it calls into question the ability for anybody to Monday morning quarterback the situation room when they weren't in it. And again, I know this particular situation might be different, but you are setting that tone going forward. And I think that is a very difficult position, because what we're going to do is end up with people in the commander-in-chief seat that are fearful of being the commander-in-chief because they know every decision they could potentially make is going to be scrutinized and potentially end up in the courts.
Ali, we had a ruling last night in Arizona that several of Trump associates were indicted in attempting to overturn the election in Arizona. Trump was not one of those folks. He's in court today in Manhattan with more discussion about this bookkeeping issue. Obviously, the Supreme Court immunity case. I mean, so again, court all day today. Is what's happening right now a net plus, a net minus, or a wash in terms of the political fallout from all of these court cases?
Honestly, I think it's probably a positive for President Trump. I think it becomes increasingly more clear that this is just, you know, a go get 'em kind of mentality. And I think people who may previously have sided on, you know, maybe that Nikki Haley voter, they look at this and they say, wow, you know, like this could really happen to anybody. It doesn't matter, you know, who it is. If you've got an R next to your name, they're coming for you. Yeah. And I think that makes people really concerned. And I think it helps to put people who are in that more independent or establishment Republican camp who may be Trump hesitant on his side, because they just, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah. Do either Seth or Steve, I agree with Ali here that I feel like this is net benefit to him because more people look at the situation and think that it's more overreach. The idea that suddenly Arizona is going after all these Trump people, coincidentally months out of a presidential year, 4 years after something happened, seems a little ridiculous. I just, it's another example that these guys literally just keep going, all right, what's next in our bag of tricks to get Trump?
Steve, you want to go round one? I'll go round two.
Sure, you bet. Well, and to that point, by the way, talk about, you know, tight elections in the state of Arizona. It wasn't just the presidential election. This attorney general who has launched these indictments won by a couple of hundred votes, literally, in a very large state of Arizona out of millions that were cast. So it's hardly, and you know, I'm not saying that she didn't win, but let's assume that's accurate. It's hardly as though she has a mandate to then go on an incredibly aggressive prosecutorial mission against Trump associates who they had an aggressive legal strategy for sure. But there's a long history in the United States of alternate slates of delegates. It's not like this has never happened. As a matter of fact, it's happened quite a bit in our history. For example, in 1960, incredibly close race between Nixon and JFK, who ultimately prevailed. The state of Hawaii, actually had two very official slates of delegates, and it was highly disputed and litigated over which would prevail. At other times, the segregationist South, the Democrats tried to have alternative slates of delegates, going back all the way to the 1876 election, which was maybe the most disputed in American history until 2020. There's a long history of this. So to call them fake electors, I think, is a narrative and propaganda term. It's an alternate slate of delegates. Now, maybe it's not a legitimate slate. And ultimately, of course, it was not counted in the Electoral College. But to criminalize this, you know, again, I think it's somewhat like what we were talking about with President Trump. Political conduct, even if you find it very unbecoming, shouldn't be criminalized in this manner.
Yeah, and I think the only thing I'll add to that, kind of going back to the core of this, is what's it going to do in the minds of the voters? And I think that one of these things that I try to look at is, I'm obviously in this every day. Steve, Ali, Sean, we're in it every day. Like we're watching what's going on. Average American isn't. And I think what's happening right now is most Americans are almost becoming tone deaf over this. And by the way, the polls say the same thing, is that most Americans are like, oh my gosh, another one? I mean, this does look like a witch hunt. So I do think that this is somewhat of a net positive, because what it's going to do, it's going to continue to invigorate and motivate Trump's base. And those that are kind of on the fence are sitting here, but are paying attention going, this is getting ridiculous. And then everybody else is kind of going, what? And so I do think that at the end of the day, while maybe minimal, it could be a net positive, especially in states like Arizona that were so close. And now people are looking at this going, this is insane. What are we doing?
Yeah, I think he's raising enough money on this. But I will say this, to your point, so much of what's happening is baked in. Somebody called me, a reporter called me last night and said, how much is this affecting him? And I said, tell me something that you've learned about Donald Trump in the last 24 or 48 hours that you didn't know. And he was like, well, but don't you think these cases hurt him? And I said, let's just rewind the tape. Access Hollywood, Charlottesville. Like, they've thrown everything at this guy. And if you think somehow that this, a bookkeeping case or this or that is affecting someone's going, oh, you know, I learned something new about Donald Trump, you're nuts. Same thing with Biden. Biden's been in office for a half a century. And the idea that you're learning something new is a little preposterous.
Sean, you know, I think that's an excellent point, by the way, and particularly particularly in regards to Arizona. I was actually just out there filming a documentary. I've done a ton of polling through my advocacy nonprofit organization of the state of Arizona. And what we're finding is, to your point, it's pretty difficult, honestly, to convert new Trump voters. That is the reality. However, a lot of Biden voters have incredible buyer's remorse over voting for Biden. And the main reason, the main driver, and this is true all over the country, but it's even worse in Arizona, is inflation. And particularly housing affordability. That is a national crisis, but it's particularly acute in Arizona. In the Phoenix area, the median new home sale just passed $600,000 per home. Now, middle-class Arizonans cannot afford a $600,000 home. That's just the reality. Housing affordability has never been worse nationally, but it's particularly bad in Arizona. So I think the vast majority of voters, you know, per Seth's point, are not focusing on the day-to-day machinations of court cases and litigation. They're focused on their daily lives, and they know that their daily life has gotten way, way tougher under Joe Biden.
One additional point on that too, Steve, because I'm watching Arizona very closely too. The border is a huge issue in Arizona. And so what's happening right now, to your point, Steve, and great points on, I love all the business and economic points, on inflation and how it's impacting the Phoenix area and even the more broad metro area. The border is also a huge crisis. And I think what's happening in Arizona, and maybe this was a play, it was almost a Hail Mary, was we got to try to change the narrative in Arizona, because we're going to lose based on these two key factors that are really driving voters, the economy and the border.
I'm so glad to hear you guys say something positive as we get towards the end of the week about Arizona, because it scares me. That's the one. Arizona, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania are my three states that I think this thing is going to come down to. And Arizona, because of the abortion issue, scares me. But I do think that you guys make really good points about issues that are dominating how people are voting. I do want to kind of segue, though, into an issue where, look, Washington doesn't do a lot that's good, and I was disgusted by a lot of the spending that occurred this week, but there was a morsel of good news with this action that Congress is taking on TikTok. And Ali, I know your group has been out front on this. Walk through where you what you think this all means in terms of the landscape and how TikTok evolves as a business and in the lives of our kids today, based on what Congress did this week.
Yeah, so I think this forced divestment is a fantastic first step. I think some important setting the stage knowledge, 41% of American youth spend 2 hours a day or more on TikTok. That is an exorbitant amount of time. I mean, if you think about the time you get with your kids, if they're in a regular school and they have extracurricular activities, you're not even getting that much face time with them. So that's an important thing to keep in the back of your mind. And then we also know there's a lot of research and data that shows that profiles with that specific age range selected to their profile are served self-harm and eating disorder content within 2 minutes and 8 minutes, respectively. So the adult and child user experience on TikTok is extremely different. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people realize. So of course, there are the data security concerns. There are concerns about our national security, and those are all valid. But I think the most underreported, and to me, the most important part of the whole TikTok debate that gets missed a lot is the impact that it has on our kids and the way that that can continue to be a problem in the future.
So what Congress really dealt with this week was the ownership, right? The Chinese exactly. ownership, which I think I agree with. Frankly, the thing that gets missed so often is we don't allow media ownership of any foreign entity. Like, we made Rupert Murdoch become a U.S. citizen when he wanted to stand up Fox. But you're addressing the bigger, broader thing that a lot of parents, I think, care about. So how does what's happening now address any of those other concerns or not?
Sure. So one point we love to make is that the algorithm isn't free speech. So a lot of these problems that we flag with this research, they occur and they exist on other platforms too. And they are not immune from criticism. Facebook, X, Instagram, they all have their own set of problems. And I very much look forward to being able to focus on them more broadly. However, TikTok poses a really unique threat because of who owns the algorithm, who is making the decisions on what our kids are seeing. We've seen a lot of that even just in the wake of October 7th, the type of content that was trending, the anti-Semitism, the pro Osama bin Laden. I mean, we can't allow that. And I think also too, particularly when you're thinking about the self-harm and this eating disorder content, we have parents who have testified before Congress that, you know, they've looked at their kids' phones. They saw no actual interaction with that content. It continued to get fed to them. They lost their children to suicide. On the eating disorder side of things, these aren't things that we would tolerate in public and in the real world. You know, if I take my daughter shopping and she comes out of the fitting room and, you know, I say, oh, that looks beautiful on you. And the person next to me says, could you imagine how good it would look if she lost 5 pounds? You would knock that person out. You would never tolerate that. And so to think that we're allowing this type of content to be algorithmically fed to our kids is awful. Now, one more point. This does not absolve parental responsibility. Right. That is a huge part of this conversation. And to anyone who may be working through this with their kids at home, trying to set those types of boundaries, we have some really great resources on our site, TikTokisPoison.com, where we have some data that can give you conversation guides with your kids. But also, if you feel like you need to just like outright block this app or any others from your kid's device, you still want them to have a phone, we have instructions for every phone available. So, okay. That type of conversation.
No question where you guys come down on that. Steve, no. There's a million arguments about TikTok, right? That the Chinese ownership, some of the things that Ali just brought up in terms of the messages that they're getting poised on. Then there's this whole First Amendment thing that the Chinese government, ironically, is trying to make. Where do you come down on this issue?
Look, I certainly concur totally with Ali about the dangers of social media broadly for children. And a lot of states, thankfully, have taken pretty aggressive action there. And I, you know, the first responsibility is with parents, but I do think there's a public policy role here, right, in trying to keep children healthy and off of these platforms. But to single out TikTok, I think is frankly wrong. And it's probably very rare that I would disagree with you, Sean, or with Ali.
Wow.
Listen, here's why I think it's wrong. A couple of reasons. First of all, I believe that Facebook, Meta, and Google are every bit as evil as TikTok, if not more so, just because they happen to be domiciled in the United States. They are run by, they may be U.S. citizens, but they're run by people who hate the United States of America, and they've been way worse in terms of political censorship than TikTok has been. And I think that is demonstrably true, okay? TikTok is way better for people who think like me in terms of posting content and not get censored compared to Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Those platforms are awful when it comes to enforcing left-wing ideology through their platforms. So to me, to only go after TikTok singularly, I think is really problematic. And I know for a fact from talking to a lot of important folks on Capitol Hill, Facebook has been lobbying harder than anybody else for this TikTok ban. So I think in many ways, this is a Facebook Protection Act that was just passed by the Congress. Now, if they had gone after all of them at once, I'd be the first person cheering them on and supporting it. But I think this is actually a dangerous, this is far more about corporate warfare of Silicon Valley against TikTok, I believe, than it is about trying to protect American kids.
Look, I agree with all of the dangers, right? And I don't disagree with you on your warnings about either one of you on your dangers about Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, et cetera. That being said, I do think there is this existential issue that China owns and is feeding messages. I think that you can do two things at once. You can go after them, then you can go after social media separately. And I think that there is a big difference in terms of who owns it, who's feeding the message and the goals that they have. Seth Denson, break the tie. Do you want $250 free right now? $250. I got your attention, didn't I? If you're a business owner that has, I don't know, five or more employees, or maybe you're not the owner, but you're the one who makes big financial decisions, that's your job, you're running the finance part of this or the expenses part, then listen up. I will put $250 in your pocket right now. No strings attached. You just have to go check out and talk to my friends at Ramp, right? Go to ramp.com/Spicer. You will want to find out what they're doing, because if you're the guy or the woman that controls the financing at the company, or you're the owner, Ramp is going to make your expense process unbelievably easier. They issue credit cards that you can give to each one of your employees. You can control all of the expenses. It streamlines so much. I had a guest on the show a couple months ago, and they called me afterward and said, I saw you talking about Ramp. We switched over to Ramp, and you wouldn't believe how much time it saves us. It helps us streamline things. We can put controls in place for our employees, how much they can spend. The reports are fantastic. If you are that business owner or the person in charge of the financing, go to ramp.com/Spicer, get the $250, but more importantly, make your life a lot easier, because Ramp is going to allow you to get those credit cards, the expense cards for each of your employees, and streamline so much of your expense and accounting systems that it'll make your life so much easier. ramp.com/Spicer.
Yeah, well, so it's interesting because I kind of agree with both, but I was leaning more towards Steve. I'm leaning more towards Steve. I'm looking this way. Steve on this, and here's why. I think we need to look at social media from a very different perspective. For example, and I've got three kids that are in this age group that now they're starting to ask, Dad, when can I have a Facebook page? And I'm like, never if I have my my choice on this. But the reality is we protect kids from cigarettes. We protect kids from R-rated movies. We protect kids from alcohol. And as equally, if not more damaging, is the mental anguish and the issues that come that Ali is just talking about, which I think are all points that parents, we should be fearful of, that kids can get on these things and what it does to their life. It is terrifying. Listen, I'm a 43-year-old man, and every time I'm on anybody's show, I get hate, and I can take it. But my kid, my 9-year-old can't. And, right. and it is one of those things we've got to protect kids from. And I think that's the role of the federal government. So I think these two issues need to be bifurcated. And I think that we need to address all social media as it goes to children and get them off of it. The second piece of this is, I do hate that foreign entities own any type of media that is going on in the United States. I do think this is going to have a challenge in the court. We've already seen that precedence in places like Montana, where it's been struck down in some of their state-based things. The other thing to think about here, though, is that there are 7 million small businesses that drive their revenue primarily through TikTok. And I think they're going to have a case in this to say, wait a minute, you're killing my free market capability. And we'll see where that goes. But all at the end of the day, so this is where I'm going to play a little bit of both sides of the fence, is I do hate the idea that China owns this. And I don't think foreign entities should own any media. But we got to look at where's the BBC, where's CCTV. I mean, there's a lot of different places out there that have media that plays in the United States that are owned by foreign governments. Are we going to address them all? Or are we going to single out TikTok on this?
Well, I like I said, I think we can do you're from Texas. I think we can do the Texas two-step. We can ban China. We're not banning. We're just saying you need to be owned so they get U.S. ownership. And then I think we can address social media writ large.
By the way, 1 in 3 people now get their information and news on TikTok here in the United States.
Okay, fair. That's
exactly.
Slowly, come on over to our side. The water's warm, brother, because you're making the case. You're literally having China dictate what you see. They don't show the same stuff in China. Right. They're showing it to us. Why do you think you're seeing these campus things go up?
I would challenge you. I think you're going to get better news on TikTok than you will on Facebook.
I don't know because so I'm not on it.
YouTube, for that matter.
Right. I don't. You know why? Because I'm not on it, so I get nothing from TikTok.
But I'm just saying, politically, TikTok does not censor, at least not the way that the American companies do. Again, run by American citizens, but people who hate the United States of America.
That's why we're also on Rumble. And I mean, I get it. Yeah. But the free market decided, and I get it. I don't disagree with you, Steve. I get. It's amazing what gets banned on Facebook and how as soon as the right figures out something, suddenly you notice how they don't allow political advertising anymore after Donald Trump realized how to effectively use Facebook. It's like suddenly we're not banning. You know? Right. I get it, but that I still think there's something different about China. It's funny though. I knew we were gonna have this conversation about what kids are seeing and learning, and this is just again sort of the host prerogative here. My son had a social studies quiz. This is his study guide. And so I was going to help him. And there's two questions that I thought I just have some fun with you guys. One of the questions that he had, number 11, was what's the process by which a bill becomes a law? Now, he's going through the whole Schoolhouse Rock thing. And his mother got upset with me because he said, you know, a bill becomes a law. I'll read you his notes because one house has presented a bill. They have to pass it by a simple majority. Then it goes to the other half and the president can then sign it, veto it, preventing it from becoming a law. The veto can be overridden by Congress. Well, of course, as I was helping him study, I explained that there's also a big thing called an omnibus at the end of the year where everyone can attach their amendments. My wife didn't think that was that funny because apparently that's not on the study guide. Then it says, how do you become a U.S. citizen? Named three ways. He wrote down, one parent must be an American. You can be born on U.S. soil in America, or you can go through naturalization. I, of course, piped in, you can then come through our southern border. Right. Democrats will make you a citizen, and then you can vote again. Wife was not happy with me adding a fourth to this. But I think it's serious in the fact that our kids are learning stuff about how our government operates. And I get why, because this is how it's supposed to work. And yet, that's really not what's happening, is it? Parents?
Yeah, honestly, I'm just glad that they were actually being asked questions about, you know, our actual like method of governing rather than any of the other things that are circulating through our school curriculum right now, like CRT and the gender studies. But yeah, I completely agree. I would also have added the same thing about our border as you did. I mean, look, right?
I'm going to make that note to the teacher. Fourth way.
Yeah, Sean, listen, I have to say, I think you should be thankful compared to a lot of schools in America that your son is at least learning the basics of civics.
You know what? You're right. Actually,
that is not going on in many schools of this country. Anywhere. Believe me, the only thing that they will learn, for example, about George Washington is that he had slaves. That's it. They won't learn anything else about this amazing man, you know, the founder of our country. And so, unfortunately, the teaching of civics, you know, has largely disappeared or it's been replaced by leftist indoctrination to try to make people feel guilty for being Americans, and especially if they happen to be a white male American, to feel particularly guilty for our heritage. So, hey, if he's learning the basics, if he's learning the Schoolhouse Rock, you know, I think that is fantastic. But, you know, I think this also speaks to a larger issue, unfortunately, when we look at polling, we see that young Americans are incredibly unpatriotic. And that's just the reality. They simply do not share a love of this country. And I think that's because for decades, we have ceded our institutions, particularly educational institutions, over to the secular humanist left. And they've been pretty successful at creating really a generation that simply doesn't have a reverence or love for our nation. Now, that can't continue. We've got to reverse that. I think with young people now, it's starting to reverse. Young meaning, you know, high school and grade school. It's starting to reverse. But we've got a lot of work to do in that regard.
I'm going to tie this all back together. We all grew up on this this show right now in a world without social media, where we ended up getting information from places like Schoolhouse Rock and things like that. And by the way, don't play under telephone wires and electrical wires too. And so we remember all of that stuff, right? And what happened now, to Steve's point of seeding the field, really, in these institutions, is we infused social media where it became about likes, endorphins, and content that's going to get attention. And now what happens is we're no longer back to this patriotic structure of America. I know when I was growing up, when you asked a kid, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? An astronaut, a firefighter, a policeman, a soldier, something of that sort. Today, most kids, the majority of kids, say, I want to be an influencer.
Yeah. What? I think that's, you know? That's interesting. And I, you know, to tie this back to TikTok, Allie, Joe Biden was very clear he was going to sign this bill. Now, of course, the bill has to do largely with Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan funding. So that's what he really cared about the most. And that's what they're messaging on. But his campaign, when they were asked, are you going to stay on TikTok? They were like, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's like to them, they don't see any kind of hypocrisy in that.
No. And honestly, this is the same reason why when asked yesterday about the protests on Columbia, he gave the argument that, was not allowed by President Trump of there are great people on both sides of this issue. I mean, like he's going to go where his audience is. And this, you know, youth market of kids who we know are being brainwashed and fed all this stuff by China, that's where they are. And he's going to go where his voting base is. Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot easier for him to disguise his mental decline and his position on issues when it only has to be a 15-second clip or soundbite or someone else can do it for him. And he has surrogates who are out there, you know, pushing these viral videos. So that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, we have not seen him or this administration be consistent on anything.
Steve, Ali mentioned Columbia. Mike Johnson was up there yesterday. He got booed a little, which I actually took as a badge of honor for him. Was it a good move or a bad move for him to go up to Columbia and make that case?
Absolutely terrible move. And let me tell you why.
Oh.
When your enemy is engaged in a civil war, don't intervene, okay? When the opposition is absolutely at odds with itself, when the left is finally tearing itself apart, and I say finally because one thing the left has been very good at over the years and decades is discipline, right? It is unity when it comes down to matters, you know, of voting, for example, whether it's the people voting or voting in Congress. Right now, the left is literally engaged in a civil war. For Mike Johnson to go up there diverts that attention then, and he becomes the boogeyman, or the, you know, supposed Christian right suddenly becomes the boogeyman. So I thought it was a massive tactical error. I don't see what the upside is at all other than pleasing some donors. And I think that's probably the only reason he went there. But look, I believe one of the reasons Donald Trump is going to prevail in a very, very tight election is, you know, when you talk about young people who are a bulwark of the Democratic coalition are extremely angry with Joe Biden. They're angry partly for economic reasons because they've been so disenfranchised in this Biden economy that only rewards the already successful. But they're also very angry about what's going on in Gaza right now. And I'm not saying I agree with their anger at all.
Right.
But the point is, there's incredible division there. And I think it puts states like Michigan and Wisconsin, for example, with huge universities, University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Wisconsin in Madison, puts those states even more in play, you know, given these problems on the left. And when they're tearing themselves apart, let them do it. Leave it alone. Not our fight for now, what they're doing on the left.
Seth Denson, you're down in Texas. Number one, your governor talks a good game when it comes to how to deal with university college campus protesters. I was like, go Greg Abbott. But secondly, I agree with Steve on this, but for different reasons. I feel like if you're going to, where is the same outrage on the border? And I know for everyone who watches this show, they feel like I keep, you know, hitting this drum every time. But this to me is the greatest threat that our country faces in terms of the criminal, terrorist, fentanyl, et cetera, threats that come over our border. Where is this same kind of outrage for that? He wants Biden to call in the National Guard. And I was like, I'm sorry, why not go down to the border and really hammer that message a little harder? What did you think about whether it was a good move or a bad move for Speaker Mike Johnson to go to Columbia yesterday?
Yeah, I felt like it looked like, from an optics perspective, to the rest of the American public, who, again, doesn't pay attention to all the day-to-day politics, that this was a political move, that there was actually nothing to gain. We all knew that Mike Johnson was going to go there, and the president wasn't going to resign. The president of the university wasn't going to resign. I mean, it looked like a political move. And, yeah. And I think, to Steve's point, this is an issue. You listen to what Bill Maher is saying on some of these things, and some of these people that are far left going, wait, what are we doing? Like, this is insanity. So let them fight this out. And by the way, I think it's insanity too. I think in the United States of America, the right to peacefully assemble is absolutely a given right. But the idea that we're going to preach genocide of a race, this is unacceptable in any context of any race and any belief system. And I think that the problem with what happened with what the speaker did yesterday, again, it didn't convey any of that. It just looked like, hey, right, here's an opportunity for me to get an image that I'm out here fighting for the people.
Ali, you've spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill as a senior advisor and to a lot of members of Congress. Do you share this? Because I think that this is bad staff work over and over again. I keep saying how he handled Marjorie Taylor Greene, it was just bad staff work. He didn't call her for 5 days. A problem could have been avoided. This is another one where I think they all got excited. Let's go to New York and step on the stairs at Columbia and express outrage. And I think Steve and Seth both expressed why this probably looks good and it wasn't.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's probably a net neutral. I don't think he said enough that was, you know, surprising to anyone to change any hearts and minds. But those of us who have worked with principals before also know that sometimes they get an idea in their head and they want to do it. This could have been, you know, it could have been one of those as well.
Fair enough.
I don't know or pretend to know, but I think at the end of the day, it probably ends up being like a net neutral. It didn't.
I don't think it did any real harm. I think you're right.
But
I do think it was a missed opportunity. I think Steve really laid out a bunch of reasons why it wasn't the best use of time. All right. I got a couple more things I want to get to. The first is a pet peeve of mine. This weekend is the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and we have freedom of assembly under our First Amendment, and the press has the freedom of the press under the same amendment. If people want to gather and salute a left-leaning press that supports the Democratic Party, God bless them, they can. I think if you're a Republican, if you're a conservative, and you want to go hang out with them, you have every right to do it. But do not complain about the bias of the press anymore if you are going to be a prop in their little games. Steve, I get it why people want to go, because they want to rub arms with a bunch of B-list celebrities and go to some parties. But I feel like all of these conservatives and Republicans who go hang out this weekend are part of the problem. Yes or no?
100% concur.
Finally, yes. We align.
People like us, people with our worldview, have no business attending and, in effect, ratifying that putrid gathering of people of narcissists who are utterly in love with themselves. You know, and I can say this, Sean, you and I have spent a lot of time in media. There is no group of people in the country who love themselves as much as the political press. If they want to engage in that orgy of self-love, let them do it without being graced by the presence of any America God-fearing conservatives.
All right, Seth Denson, if you get the invitation in your mail, are you joining? No judgment here, but are you going if you get the invitation?
I'll be there. I'll be there, and I will take it on the chin, because I think showing up and showing that you'll show up to that is critical. And I think sometimes we as conservatives always want to throw the right cross and instead just, you know what, sit there and go, you know what, our time's coming too, buddy. I'm going to be here. I'm going to take it, because I'm just going to smile my way through and turn the other cheek, because guess what? My time's coming. So yeah, I'm showing up. And I'm just going to sit there. I'm not going to rub elbows. By the way, I'm not getting an invitation either. But
I feel bad for the people watching this or listening to this on the audio version, because you can't see my utter disappointment with Seth.
You said no judgment. You said no judgment.
I know, but then you disappointed me. Allie, what do you think? Full disclosure, I've been before. I am a recovering. I'm on step 8 of this, but I feel like things have really changed since Trump, and it has become personal and vitriol has gone to a whole new level. Allie, am I wrong in this?
You're not. And
I agree with you.
However, I fall more in the Seth camp, because I cannot stand what the media has become. I was a press person on the Hill, as you mentioned, forever, and lived through this transition in the Trump administration. But I don't think there is anything more powerful than showing up with your shoulders back and your head held high and just being like, bring it on. Like, you're not going to intimidate me.
I get it, but we don't
get... You're going to give me the crap coverage no matter what. So...
But see, here's where I disagree. If I get to respond, I'm all for you. If they said, you get to go, we go, fine. Tit for tat, I'm for it.
That's true.
But being a potted plant while they mock you is not, to me, the best and highest use of my time. We don't have a ton of time, and I'm glad that most people agree with me. That being said, real quick, I want to go around the horn. Give me your week's winner and loser. Steve, I'll start with you.
Well, the winner, unfortunately, is Zelensky, who gets a mountain of borrowed U.S. money to continue a pointless
borrowed
war.
Borrowed keyword.
Borrowed money. That is, we don't have this money. We're borrowing it in taxpayer name so that he can continue to send his own people to a slaughter rather than to negotiate. So he is sadly the winner. The loser of the week, U.S. Border Patrol, who got ignored once again. These brave men and women who are trying to guard America's front door are doing an impossible job because of what Biden, Harris, and Washington, D.C. have done to them. I was just down there visiting them last week. Morale is terrible, but these patriots nonetheless are trying their very best to protect this country. And in many ways, it's an impossible task. So they are certainly the losers of this week.
Unfortunately. Seth, who do you have on your winner and loser for the week?
Winner, great state of Texas, Governor Abbott, and my Texas Department of Public Safety, who said, not in Texas. We're not doing this, right? Loser, unfortunately, women's sports with the redefinition of Title IX and what classifies a woman. I thought that that was detrimental to women's sports going forward, and I hated seeing that.
Total, Seth Denson, you redeem yourself. Great picks. Allie, Allie, who do you have? And you come at the crucial time, right at the end. Boom. Allie, what do you got?
I'll double down on TikTok. I think the winner of the week is American families who are on the front lines of fighting this battle with their kids. I would second Seth. Loser is definitely female athletes. Look, I played college sports. I grew up. I am where I am in large part because of the opportunities that women's sports gave me and the leadership abilities that I was able to hone and learn as part of being on a team and having that camaraderie and that environment. And I think they're losers not only because of the rule change itself, but also because even the fact that we didn't talk about it on the show before this, it got totally swept under the rug because of all the other big news that happened. And that was intentional. So I really look forward, especially from our organization, in taking up arms on that fight next.
All right. I'm almost out of time. I'll tell you, I agree. The winner, I think, are Republicans who voted to sell TikTok, to force the sale of TikTok. The losers, I think the loser this week is that woman who forced Alec Baldwin to push her camera, because I knew enough people who don't like Alec Baldwin that felt a little like sympathetic for him. And I never want to feel sympathy for Alec Baldwin and what he's done. But I think you guys outdid me. I feel better. But just real quick, as we end, I think the point that Allie brought up was so perfect, because we're going to talk about this tomorrow. Title IX, what it means for women going forward, how the Biden administration is changing it. So you're not going to want to miss this discussion, because she's absolutely right. We're not going to let this go. We're going to explain how important this is. So make sure you hit that notification button, subscribe, YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your information. Thanks to the panel for a great discussion. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.